You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus from New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vohner. Nice to have you with us this weekend. I don't know about you, but and you've probably heard me say this time and time again, that one of my passions is for movies in general, but mostly classic movies. Big fan of TCM, but movies in general. I think when somebody can get before a camera and, step out of their natural comfort zone and recreate another character, I think is absolutely amazing. And that's why this week my guest is former Boston Globe movie critic Ty Burr. We'll be talking about what Ty is up to these days, and what's looking like stellar performances this year, as some of the biggest films and some of the big film expositions start to begin. Hey, Ty, nice to have you with us.
Hey, Al, thanks for having me on.
I got to assume, you and I have never met, but I've got to assume that you, like myself, have loved movies ever since you were a kid.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The origin story I tell is that when I was 14, my mom said, hey, stay up. And my dad passed away when I was quite young, and my mom said when I was 14, stay up till midnight and watch this movie that your dad loved. It was his favorite movie, and it was The Marx Brothers and Duck Soup. And that was it. I was sold. I'd never seen a movie like that before. I'd never seen an old movie. And from then on, I was like, oh, I gotta know more about this medium.
And I got to say, I agree with you with the Marx Brothers. I mean, they looked like they had more fun making movies than anybody on the planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But let me ask you more. Here's my problem. You heard me say at the outset that classic movies have always, and it sounds like the same holds true for you as well. The depth of characters, even the directors of the day, the John Fords, the Leo McCarries, the Howard Hawks of the world, mm-hmm. still resonate with filmmakers and actors to this day. But here's the difference, Ty, that really throws me off, and why I'm becoming somewhat disillusioned by movies today versus 30, 40, 50 years ago, is that there seems to be this plethora, if you will, of big explosions, and everything has to be high energy and fast and furious, and there has to be an alter hero versus the protagonist. And it just sometimes gets to the point where I'm thinking, where's the soft, gentle love stories of the world? Where are those, where's that one man or one woman in the million that stands out from the crowd and becomes the hero at the end of the film? Am I just kind of overemphasizing this, or is this a trend that's catching on?
Well, I think that if you go back and you look at the classic films, could have some pretty simplistic stories. And, you look at a movie like Shane, which is an absolute stone classic, and that's about as white hat, black hat as it comes. But what I will say is that movies today I have to qualify, movies released by the major studios today rely on digital effects, lots of action, and what I call intellectual property, franchises. They have to be made from something that audiences are familiar with. They have to be a superhero movie, or they have to be a Star Wars movie or a Harry Potter movie. They are a Fast and Furious movie. There's no originality, because studios have come to believe, and audiences behave as if an original idea is uncomfortable for them. They won't go see it in the theaters. What we used to call movies, dramas, romances, comedies, musicals, even suspense movies, those are made by the smaller independent production companies and distributed by the independent distributors and play in independent movie houses. Some people call art house movies, but it's kind of where movies as we think of them now play off if they're not going directly to streaming. So when you go to the multiplexes, you're seeing a kind of movie that you and I almost don't recognize as a movie these days.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. I think, as you said, I mean, Ty, you know this better than anybody. At the end of the day, or at the end of the year, I should say, it's you know, what's the bottom line? What was our return on investment here? And and you know what? I think, correct me if I'm wrong here. Again, you have more insight than most people. My sense is that since the onset of social media and technology as we know it today, life in general has to be sensationalized. Otherwise, it's dull, boring, and mundane. And that's sad because I think, as you alluded to, you know, whatever happened to that romantic, you know, that starts off as two people, there's some kind of chemistry, we don't know where it's going to go. I find that fascinating. Or screwball comedies, or as you said, Hero Shane, or coming up, I think, in the next week or so, John Ford's The Searchers with John Wayne. I mean, to me, those are, you know, immortal movies, but nothing like that is made anymore. So what I'm getting at is it comes down to the dollars, does it not?
You know, I actually disagree with your statement that those things aren't being made. They are being made, but they're not. They have a tough time reaching audiences because they're not playing in the big multiplex brick and mortar theaters where most people go to see movies. They're playing in the, you know, if you're lucky, your town has an independent theater, or there's one within driving distance, or they're playing off on streaming platforms. You know, they're there for like $4.99 rental on Amazon, but you don't know about them because Amazon doesn't promote them and nobody's talking about them. It's part of the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing now, that I've left the Globe and I started this newsletter, email newsletter, to help people find these good movies that are out there on streaming and in theaters, but nobody knows how to get them to audiences. I agree with you that what is most people think of movies are special effects extravaganzas. And I would actually take that all the way back to when Jaws and Star Wars hit the theaters way back in the 70s, the studios understood that, oh, this is a blockbuster. This is a movie, the kind of movie we can kind of keep making. And those movies were great, but they relied on sensation and in a way that previous movies had relied on story. And you can draw a line from those movies to when digital effects became possible and then primary. To any of the superhero movies today, the Marvel Comics movies, that are all special effects and very baseline stories. And the well-written screenplay doesn't exist in those movies.
And you know, Ty, I guess, you know, you and I growing up in a different, you know, era, were kind of weaned on, I mean, I love black and white. People go, you know, my daughter says, you're weird. Nobody watches black and white anymore. I tend to like black and white. That doesn't mean that I won't watch a color film. I certainly will. But legends were made. And I'm not discounting. There's some terrific, I mean, people who have really stood the test of time. Meryl Streep certainly comes to mind, Dustin Hoffman, De Niro, and the list can go on and on and on. But again, you have to capture, I guess, if you're an executive in a movie studio, then you have to look at demographics, you have to look at the audience today, you have to understand what they're looking for. So what you and I may want to see may not be part and parcel. But more importantly, go back to something you had said. I remember Saturday afternoons, and probably you do too, going into right here in the city of Worcester. I don't even think there's one left anymore, where you could go in. There were half a dozen, maybe even more than that. On a Saturday afternoon, you get a box of popcorn and a soda, and you sit there on this big screen, and you sit back for 2 hours and watch this great movie. That was all part of the aura, and some of that is gone, has it not?
Well, I mean, the pandemic, COVID, really almost destroyed the live movie theater experience, and it's had a tough time coming back.
Yeah.
And you combine that with streaming platform, you know, everybody staying home and binging TV series. It is, you do wonder, and I've been asked, is the movie theater experience going away? And I say no, because we are wired to want to experience stories as part of a crowd. To me, that goes back to the cavemen talking about today's hunt around the campfire. and there's no experience like being in a packed movie theater where everybody's kind of rocking to the same movie, and just the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and you just have that experience of experiencing it together in a way that just brings people together as a society, as a culture.
Right.
That I don't think is ever going to go away. Yeah. The movies may change, the experiences may change, but people need that.
Ty, how about that? Here's another question I have for you. Again, this is my own read. I could be way off the mark. Let's take a Marty Scorsese, Italian-American. Most of his movies have Italian actors, and there's been people who say, oh, he makes just mafia movies. Not true.
No, not true.
Right. But there's a genre. What I'm getting at is I feel that people like Scorsese have found a close-knit relationship with some terrific actors, whether they be Italian or otherwise. And maybe there's a certain thread, common thread, that goes through the movies. But if it's successful on the first run, the second run, why would you want to alter it, right?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, what I'm saying is even the modern-day directors today, if they find their niche and something works for them, whether it was working with De Niro and Joe Pesci on a regular mm-hmm. basis, or Pacino, and the idea of these rough and tumble Italian guys, whether it's from Jersey or New York, a lot of Scorsese movies have that kind of theme. And I'm just wondering if Marty Scorsese takes a step back and says, you know what, I could produce and direct any movie I want, but this works for me. So what I'm asking is, do many directors rely on their comfort zone?
Well, first, let me take issue with you on Scorsese, because he's a much, much broader director than not just you. There's this public idea that he only makes mob movies, that Goodfellas and The Irishman is all he's good for. I don't know if you've seen Silence, which is a movie priests in Japan, in medieval Japan. Mm. Terrific movie. I don't know if you've seen Shutter Island. And also, to the point, is that he's incredibly involved in restoration of classic films and getting international films to American audiences. He oversees a series of films on the Criterion DVD label that are international films that don't have distribution, get an American release. To my mind, he's actually sort of the idea of the well-balanced director, but people have this idea that that's all he does. I get a little frustrated with that because. And I think he must too. But I do think that certain directors absolutely have niches that they feel comfortable with. They know that works. The better ones try and bust out of those and do something different if they're allowed to. If the studios executives allow them to make a movie that's different from what they're sort of known for. And that's the bottom line, is who gets to green light the movies? Who gets to make the decision like, oh, yeah, we'll give you the money to make this, but we won't give you the money to make that.
Yeah.
So I think the creative people in Hollywood, and I'm not just talking about movies, I'm talking about in TV as well, love to be able to try something different. But the people holding the purse strings and looking at the audiences want them to do something familiar.
Yeah, and that's certainly no question about it. That's very frustrating, and that goes back to, that leads to the next question, but I just want to take a quick pause to remind folks that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Vone, your host. My guest this week is former Boston Globe movie critic Ty Burr. We're talking about, I think Ty will tell you just as well as I can, our favorite pastime, movies, whether it be classic movies or modern day movies. And Ty, going back to what you just said, when I started getting into movies and doing more and more research, there are a couple of things that come up to mind. One was the studio system. Mm-hmm. As you said, these heavy-handed, these people owned it. This was their, it was their business. Their name was everywhere. They certainly didn't want to jeopardize things. The movies had to have a certain, you couldn't go too far one direction or the other, or, you mm-hmm. might lose customers, viewers. So it sounds like I don't think they use the term studio system anymore, but is it sort of like that still today?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. You don't have studios that owned stars, and you go back to the classic era, and you know they owned, Paramount owned, certain stars. I think MGM owned Katharine Hepburn and Jimmy Stewart for 7-year contracts, and that star system doesn't exist today, and that sort of vertical system of production doesn't exist today, in ways that I think harm the movies and in ways that I think are, are helpful, certainly to actors who have much more freedom of choice. I do think that one thing that's interesting is that in recent years, as streaming companies like Netflix and Amazon Prime have amassed subscribers and have these big war chests of money to buy films and produce films, they are starting to act like the old-fashioned studios. And in fact, Netflix has made deals with certain directors and actors, Steven Soderbergh, Adam Sandler, where those people are basically making movies for Netflix now. And they'll play in theaters, but then go straight to the streaming service. And I'll be very curious to see how that shakes out. It's not the old, studio model, but it's, in certain ways, it kind of looks like it.
Right, right. Another term that was often used was method acting. In other words, there were styles of acting, whether you learned that, through working with a coach. In fact, back in the 40s and 50s, very prevalent to come out of a system like that. I get the sense, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, that today, you got raw talent. If you've got it, I mean, it means getting noticed, no question about it. And that's the hard part. But terms like that aren't really used anymore, are they?
No. You mean method acting?
Yeah.
No, but there are certain actors and actresses we associate with, I would say, a seriousness of purpose. To me, there's always been a difference between actors and stars. And there's an overlap there, but and I actually wrote a book about this about 9 years ago called Gods Like Us on Movie Stardom and Modern Fame. That's all about, it's really a history of movie stardom. Hmm. To me, an actor, we look at somebody like De Niro or Meryl Streep, Benedict Cumberbatch, and say, well, that's an actor because they're different from film to film. We go expecting them to be a different person.
Right.
A star is somebody we expect to see play variations on themselves or who we think they are. Tom Cruise is a perfect example of somebody, you go to see Tom Cruise, you don't go to see who he's playing, you go to see him
right.
be that persona of Tom Cruise. And you could say that about the classic stars. You could say that about Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant, Betty Davis. People went to see them play variations on that persona that they really enjoyed. And there's plenty of overlap, and there's plenty of stars who are great actors, and there are plenty of actors who are huge stars, but we think of them differently, and we think of actors as possessing an approach to craft that we used to associate with method acting, but that label has sort of gone away. Even as we look to certain actors and say, oh yeah, you are walking in the footsteps of Marlon Brando. I'm thinking of Ryan Gosling, Leonardo DiCaprio, who is also a huge star,
right.
An actress like Cate Blanchett, who is, nobody's interested in what she's like off screen. You go to see her act. You go to see her transform into somebody you never met before.
Right. The other thing is, and I don't know if it's quite the same today, again, and that's why I throw this out to you. There's an upcoming film. This is how anal I can be with this. The Awful Truth. I'm a lover of screwball comedies, and nobody today in my lifetime has ever personified that better than Cary Grant. In fact, mm-hmm. it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was the screwball comedy that really kind of put him on the map. But what I'm getting at is sitting at, and this is coming off of a book that I had read not too long ago that him and Irene Dunne and other fellow actors, supporting actors in that film would sit around, and Leo McCary just half hour to an hour in the mornings or whenever they get started, Nobody was going over a script. Nobody was talking about what their role was in the movie. Just McCary just wanted to kind of get a feel out of people, and the actors found it very frustrating. And I'm thinking, well, you know what? As I thought about it, first I'm thinking, yeah, he was a real pain. But then as I thought about it, I'm thinking, the guy maybe wanted to get draw something out of each actor before he put them in front of a camera. Does that sound weird, or is that sort of...
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, every director has a different approach to working with actors to try and get the best out of them. And some have, you know, approaches that can be toxic. And some directors were, you know, legendary for not being, you know, fun to work with. I'm thinking of Otto Preminger, you know.
John Ford.
You know, John Ford was exactly no picnic. But McCary's a very good example as somebody who is able to, and Hawks, too.
Yes, Howard Hawks,
Howard Hawks is probably my favorite director of that era,
yep.
Who never talked about the method, never sat down and talked about motivation or something, but knew how to draw these engaged performances out of actors who, again, were working within established personas. And your point is very good that Cary Grant never quite became Cary Grant until he was freed up to do comedy. And that sort of loosened something in him and turned him into, and by the way, I think every young man should be sat down and made to watch five Cary Grant movies, because that will teach him how to function as a man in society in a way that I think I can't think of any other actor that I would do that with. I do think that directors, the skilled ones, have the ability to bring something out of actors that even the actors don't know is there.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that's always been my feeling, is that there was in the man's mind, you know, in McCary's mind, there was a reason for sitting actors around in a circle for an hour or two before getting started, and obviously the success of the movies, and as you talked about Howard Hawks, the same way. Ford, well, you know, John Ford was very heavy-handed. I remember reading books where he would berate. Everybody thinks, you don't mess with John Wayne. Well, John Ford did.
Yes.
He called him every name in the book, and he made him feel like 2 cents. But, you know, I'm just wondering, Ty, if that, at least in that era, did that build character, or was the guy just want to dominate people? I mean, what was it? Was there a reason for all of that?
No, he was an abusive son of a bitch who had an incredible visual sense. And you should see. So there's a movie coming out this fall by Steven Spielberg. It's called The Fablemans. It's Steven Spielberg's autobiographical drama. Fictionalized version of his own growing up in California in the 60s, making Super 8 epics in his backyard while his parents are splitting up, played by Michelle Williams and Paul Dano. But there's a scene, it's not a spoiler, there's a scene where the young man, who's basically the stand-in for Spielberg, goes for his first job in the movie industry. He's like not even in college yet. And he somehow ends up in interview with John Ford, who is played by David Lynch, the director, in an absolutely pitch-perfect impression of old John Ford with the eye patch and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
and it is a delicious scene because he's absolutely as crusty and, as scary as you would imagine, but he also has, the scene has this wonderful bit where he just says this one thing that gives this young wannabe filmmaker a perfect visual lesson. And I'm not going to spoil it. You should see the movie.
Yeah.
As we well know, some of the greatest artists can be some of the least pleasant people.
Yeah.
And some of the greatest artists can also be the nicest people.
And as you know, what you saw on screen and then delved into their more so today, you can see much more of the social life of the real. In other words, after the cameras have shut down. But back then it was protect. But some of them were abusive, had terrible home lives, drunks, you name it. And yet when they got before the camera, it was like, wow, how is this possible that they could do that? We've only got a few moments left, so I want to ask you a couple things. One is, is there a favorite movie in Ty Burr's mind for you personally?
Yes. A movie critic always gets asked, "What's your favorite movie?" And I have three. One is The Godfather, because it's true. It's my favorite movie, and if everybody knows it, and they kind of nod and go, "Yeah, okay, I agree with that." But it's absolutely true. One is this completely obscure French film from the 70s called Celine and Julie Go Boating. That's a wonderful Alice in Wonderland fable that's actually now wasn't available for years in this country. It's now available on a DVD from Criterion, and it's playing on the Criterion channel. And then if I had to go with a classic, so many, but probably the one that I keep coming back to is Bringing Up Baby, Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn screwball comedy. I could watch that every day for the rest of my life.
Well, let me know when you got a weekend, because I'll be right there with you. One of my favorites as well. In the closing moment that we have, and I do have to wrap it up, but the newsletter, can people subscribe to it? How do they do that?
Absolutely. It is free. If you want to pay for it, you get extra stuff. If you go to tyburswatchlist.substack.com, not at Substack, .substack.com, tyburswatchlist, T-Y-B-U-R-R-S, watchlist.substack.com. You can sign up for the newsletter 2-3 times a week. You get an email from me saying, here's an interesting movie on Netflix. Here's an interesting movie in theaters. It may be old. It may be new. It may be something on Turner Classics. It may be a TV series. But I am the whole idea, and I left the Globe to do this because I felt like newspapers and magazines weren't covering movies the way we watch them now.
Right.
We all have Netflix. We all have Amazon Prime. A lot of us do. Many people have HBO Max or Hulu or whatever. And you don't know what's on them besides whatever's sort of in the top tier. They're sort of pushing at you whenever you turn on the TV. There's no curation. My job and my delight to do this is to tell people, here's something good. You didn't know it was on there, but you should check it out.
That's what
the watch list is.
I mean, kudos to you. I agree with you. I think it's so different today, navigating as to what is a real quality film versus something that's just you're gonna sit there and go, what am I doing here? As sad as that is. But again, my guest this week is Ty Burr, the former Boston Globe movie critic, and Ty's new venture is really something you should all take advantage of, especially if you're a movie lover. And I know most of you are. You may not admit it, but we're maybe closet movie lovers, but it doesn't matter. It really sometimes a departure from the real world, and I've always found that a nice place to go weekends, evenings, whatever it may be. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.